much. The next matter is Daniels v. Solomon & Solomon.
Please to court Joe Jones from Jones Wilbur Kapok on behalf of the appellant, Ms. Daniels. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for the second part. A debt collection letter sent from a law firm is an implied threat of legal action.
Wait a minute, though. Let's go back on what the letter here is. Right? The letter in this case said this is from a debt collector.
Correct.
Right? That's what the letter says.
Correct. Every debt collection letter that goes out in the state of New Jersey will have that language.
Because it's the law requires it, and it's a disclaimer.
Exactly. It's statutory language that has to be in there underneath E11. It's got to be in there whether you're a law firm or whether you're a debt collector or any type of collection letter that's going out to a consumer.
So the only way, though, this letter would be known by the recipient to come from, quote, a law firm would have to go to a website, to yet a different website, correct?
No, I wouldn't agree with that.
You're relying on the PC and the...
Oh, no, I'm relying on the totality of all of the words in the letter and the website itself.
I don't understand the totality. What are you saying those words?
Okay, well, for example, if you just look at the letterhead to start with, okay, the letterhead is Solomon & Solomon PC. It's common knowledge that PC stands for what? Professional Corporation. Very limited on who can use PC.
Everybody uses PC. Architects, engineers,
correct.
Doctors.
Correct. Okay,
so PC does that connote automatically that it's from a lawyer?
I would agree with that, but let's look at it a little bit deeper. Who else is sending a debt collection letter on behalf of Niagara Electric Company to Ms. Daniels? I don't think Niagara Company hired the architects to send out debt collection letters. I don't think Niagara Electric Company hired the healthcare provider to send out a debt collection letter. Okay. In addition to that, when you read the letter in its entirety, the letter instructs the consumer to act now, it's urgent, contact us. Okay. And it tells them to contact...
Tell me there, because what would they expect to say? You're taking time to run the arrears here. You may want to, maybe, you know, this year, next year, maybe, to get around to it, drop us some...
Well, I can't tell them how to rewrite their letters. Okay, that's...
Well, how would you write the letter? You're writing to... If you were to the collector, how would you write a letter to... You want to pay it. It's a collection letter.
Sure.
You got to say... Oh, that's what I was saying. Let's settle. Let's resolve this matter.
I don't have a problem with them telling them to contact us. Okay, I have no problem with that. In fact, the debt collection company wants you to call so they can work out some kind of a payment plan so you can call and talk about the debt. But the argument here is that they have to tell the consumer that it's a law firm. Okay, and they do tell the consumer it's a law firm. They tell them in the name. They tell them in the letter. And in the letter, it also tells them to go to the website. So... Opposing counsel's position...
In the letter, where did they say in the letter that this is from a law firm?
Excuse me?
Where did in the letter they say it's from a law firm?
I think if you read the letter in its entirety, it's obvious that it's from a law firm.
We've all read it. Show us where we've done that.
Solomon & Solomon PC, they're not an architectural firm. They're not a healthcare provider. They're not an accounting firm.
They didn't say they're a law firm.
Excuse me?
They never said they're a law firm.
They didn't explicitly say they're a law firm, but if you read the letter and you follow their instructions and you go to the website as they tell you to do, it makes it very clear that they're a law firm.
They tell you to go to the website to pay, but you don't go to the website if you don't want to pay.
That's not necessarily so. They also told you to email them at the website, okay? They also tell you to call them, okay, at a toll-free number as well. So... We live in an age today where we are very technologically advanced, okay? And this goes back to the Douglas case, okay, where there was a case that a debt collection letter came out in a window envelope and it had a QR code in it, a scan code in it. And in today's world, it's very common. You would pick up your cell phone and you would scan it. You didn't have to tell somebody to do it. They just automatically did that. And what happened was that private information popped up, okay? So I think a debt collector who chooses to use the technology today, such as websites, such as QR codes, it can't be surprised that a consumer would use the same technology.
Now, you want us to incorporate the website into the letter, correct?
I think the website absolutely has to be incorporated.
But you didn't give us the website. We don't have the website. We don't know. No, we don't have in the record the website as it existed on April 4th, 2016. Nor do we have any description in the complaint as to what it is that was in that letter, that website, that would make you say that it became
involuntary. It wasn't in your complaint.
It's not there.
We cited the website in our complaint, okay? I don't think there's been any.
I don't know that it's been cited in
the complaint. No, I don't think it was cited in your complaint.
If you look at the complaint, I can look up the paragraph for you, but we talk about the website in the complaint.
We talk about it.
We talk about the website in the complaint. We mentioned that there's a website, then we give the website address.
I don't see the website address. I'll just read you paragraph 31. According to Solomon PC's website, Solomon PC are only able to litigate accounts in New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island.
Yes, that's
the only allegation about the website in the complaint.
That's
correct. You represent to the court that that's how it read in April of 2016?
Yes.
You're absolutely positive it didn't read differently. Like, say, for example, it says, and we associate with lawyers with other parts of the country.
I can't testify to every single page on the website. I can testify that it said what you said, okay, that it has lawyers in those particular states. I don't think it's a disputed fact that Solomon & Solomon doesn't have a licensed attorney there, okay, in Pennsylvania. Referring it to an outside counsel is very different, okay? They didn't refer to an outside counsel when they sent the letter. The letter is an implied threat or an implied implication that the attorney is doing something to it, okay?
Is that in the letter? Even if we incorporate the payment website, which we don't have in front of us as a matter of the record, where is there some implication a lawyer was involved or there was a threat of litigation that could not have been sustained?
I think the letter itself, I think any communication from an attorney, it's an implied threat of litigation.
Okay? You're assuming that it comes from an attorney.
Right.
Correct. And anything that comes from an attorney is an implied threat that there's legal action, is pending, or legal action could happen. That's been established.
Well, no, the letter does not indicate, you're getting ahead of yourself. You're saying the letter is from an attorney. There's nothing in the letter saying it's from an attorney.
They don't use the words attorney.
Well, what word in the letter shows that there's an attorney?
I think two things. I think PC, and it's first it's a debt collection letter being sent to you by a professional corporation. I don't know of any architects that send out debt collection letters.
I'm looking just at the letter, and that's what this statute deals with, that's what the cases deal with.
Well, I think we have to look beyond the letter, and there's cases that have looked just beyond the letter itself.
The second thing is that two things in the letter.
Okay, the second thing is the website in the letter. Okay, I think you have to include the website.
Here, we don't know what that is. Does the allegation?
We've got in the complaint.
We don't know what website is.
I would submit if the opinion was solely if the dismissal was solely based on that, then this dismissal should have been without prejudice and gave the plaintiff the opportunity to replead. Okay, that wasn't what happened in this case.
No, the district court didn't think it should be incorporated, correct?
Correct. And the district court dismissed it with prejudice. I would argue if that's the basis for this panel's decision or the lower court's decision, that it should have been dismissed with prejudice and the plaintiff should have been given the opportunity to replead. That isn't what happened here.
Was there a request before the district court?
No, there was not. We read the opinion. I think we understood where the judge was coming from, so we decided to appeal right away. Okay, but I just want to touch again on incorporating a website because there's precedent for that. We have done that before. We did that in the Douglas case.
Douglas was different. Wasn't Douglas the QR case?
Yes. But
that was a privacy issue, and it was a different provision of the code.
But what it does show, it shows that a court can look beyond just the four letters, just the four corners of what's on the letter itself.
Not in a collection case. You're dealing with the law. The law says you look at the collection case.
Douglas was a collection case. Douglas was a collection letter case that you had to take a third-party scan phone, an iPhone, and scan the QR code to pop up this information that wasn't in the letter, that was coded. And what it shows is that we use technology to do that. Why is that any different than somebody going to a website?
If we had the website, and it's a 12B6, that it seems, at least for my purposes, that would be helpful. But without the website, and I went online again this morning, not to the website, but to the payment site, but we don't know if what's there now is what was there back in 2016 when this letter was sent.
I would submit if that's the basis, then the matter should have been dismissed without prejudice and the plaintiff should have been given the opportunity to.
But you just said you didn't ask for that opportunity, you took an appeal.
We decided to take an appeal right away on it.
Because we
stole it.
You can't fault the district court for not giving you an opportunity to do something you never asked for. If you didn't ask to be pleaded to amend the complaint, and you're saying, well, this is without prejudice when you really did not say let us amend the complaint.
Well typically in the district, down in the district, if it's a pleading issue, normally, if it's going to be dismissed, it's almost always dismissed without prejudice, okay? And that just wasn't what happened in this case. When we read the opinion, we still thought to this day that the judge got it wrong, okay? I look at that letter, and I look at lots of letters. I look at that letter, and I can't imagine a least sophisticated consumer getting a letter from Solomon & Solomon, PC, who is, in fact, a law firm. That's an undisputed fact.
Is it a law firm that does anything other than debt collection?
Solomon & Solomon? I don't think they do anything beyond debt collection. And I can tell you that, I would bet you that the person who answers the phone when you call the toll-free number they tell you to call, gets paid from Solomon & Solomon, the law firm. I would bet you that the commission that they get paid on the debt collection that they do in Pennsylvania without they're not even licensed in, I bet you that commission goes into the general operating law firm's business account. They're operating as a law firm. And the argument here is that if they're operating as a law firm, they have to tell the consumer to operate as a law firm. There's suggested language that's out there on a whole string of cases. I don't necessarily agree with the language, but it's out there, and it goes something to the effect that no attorney with this law firm has personally reviewed the individual particular circumstances of your case. That at least tells the consumer that it's a law firm. Okay, they're not going to sue me yet. Nobody's really looked at it yet, but at least they kind of know what's going on. There's a difference between a debt collector and a law firm, okay? And it's been cited, and I think this court itself has cited this in at least two different cases, that just including language that this communicates is from a debt collector doesn't nullify the fact that the letter that it's from a law firm and it has the implied implication from a law firm. Being a debt collector and being a law firm are not mutually exclusive.
That's exactly right. And so let's assume that the debtor was advised that they're a debt collection, they're engaged in debt collection. And that's all the law firm does, is we are engaged in debt collection. There's nothing misleading about that.
Well, there is some absolutely.
How is it misleading?
It would be misleading.
All they do is debt collection.
Okay, I'll tell you how it would be misleading. In Pennsylvania, it would be misleading. And the reason why it would be misleading in Pennsylvania is that when a letter comes from a law firm, there's an implied threat that they can take legal action. They cannot take legal action in the state of Pennsylvania because they don't have an attorney on staff that's licensed in Pennsylvania.
If the operative website said, and we have a host of lawyers outside of the five states we've identified who can bring suit, telling the reader, hypothetically, that they can bring suit in Pennsylvania. So it's not false.
I respectfully still disagree with that because Solomon & Solomon can't bring that suit. They have to give it out to somebody else. Then it would come from Pressler & Pressler or whatever the next law firm is going to be. But Solomon themselves cannot bring the lawsuit. Okay, so if it's an implied threat that they themselves cannot take, it's a false threat of an action that they can't take. Solomon & Solomon, no way can they file a lawsuit here. Now, granted, they can hire a local counsel and come in pro hoc vice, but at the time they sent that letter, okay, and gave the impression that it's from a law firm, they could not file a suit in the state of Pennsylvania. And that, again and again, if you go back to Lesher, basically tells you that it's not, they can't do that, okay? That's a false threat of action that they cannot take. But the consumer who reads this letter doesn't know that. They get this collection letter from Solomon & Solomon Law Firm. They read it. They question the amount. They go to the website. They find out about this law firm. They don't know that no attorney with that firm can actually bring that lawsuit, okay? They think they can. The least sophisticated consumer gets a letter from a lawyer.
We intend to argue, Mr. Jones.
Excuse me?
We intend to argue and reserve some time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Bill McDevitt. I'm with the law firm of Wilson, Elser, Moskowitz, Edelman, and Dicker. PC, I have the pleasure of representing. Sorry, I just thought I'd say the whole name in here. Solomon & Solomon PC, I'd like to open based on the last argument and say that I wholeheartedly endorse Judge Sirk's opinion in this case, finding that this letter wasn't violative of the FDCPA.
Could it be a scenario where, and maybe this isn't the case, but where the letterhead says PC or something similar that the average or the least informed consumer would automatically assume that it is the chances are this is from a lawyer, or in fact it is from a lawyer. And then within that letter, and the letter perfectly polite, very, very gracious, sir, we're sorry that your debt to us suggests that you might be incurring some financial difficulty. We commiserate with that. We understand that hard times come across folks. If you'd be so kind as to go to our website, we can kind of help you work through your financial difficulties in a way that will allow you to satisfy your obligation to us. And you go to the website, and there's all kinds of stuff that jumps right at you, telling you that if you don't have a check in the mail, certified check in the mail within X number of hours, your house is going to be foreclosed on, your youngest is going to be, all kinds of horribles. I think you'd agree, maybe you wouldn't agree, but I think you'd agree in that context, the website is so tied to the purpose of the letter that for purposes of the act, you have to look at both to determine whether or not there's been a violation of subsection 3.
Okay, Your Honor. I'd like to break your question into two parts. Because
that's why I put you all one time.
Yeah.
Because if you break it into two parts, I lose.
I think it went on for a bit, but I think it I did. Can kind of into two sections.
I did to do that.
The first section was if it said PC.
Right.
And if it said PC on a letterhead, if it identifies, as you see with legal letterhead, these are all the attorneys that we have in the firm. These are the states that they're licensed in. And it uses the firm itself as some sort of pressure to the person.
I haven't seen most, but the letterhead I'm familiar with doesn't always tell you where they're licensed. In fact, some of the firms are so big they can't tell you where they're licensed.
I agree, Your Honor. But in all of the cases in which it was held that using legal letterhead is coercive, and this is what the touchstone is in the FDCPA. Before somebody makes a decision about what they're going to do about this debt, is this letter communicating something to them to freak them out, to make them say, we're going to do something?
When you said freak them out, coercive, you're saying freak them out. That's still coercive, which I think is somewhere on the scale, short of being freaked out.
Okay, well.
With putting PC on there, or some indication that it's from a law firm, would that be coercive?
I don't believe that putting PC alone without some other indicia that this is a law firm communicates to the common consumer that this is, or the least sophisticated consumer.
If it did, number one, this is 12B6.
Okay.
Number one, is that an issue of fact? But even beyond that, let's just focus on, you said, some other information to communicate that this is a law firm. If PC in and of itself was sufficient to communicate that it is a law firm, and if the firm is not licensed to practice in Pennsylvania, and one of the claims they have is under subsection 3, the other claims, it seems to me, are just not there, at least under subsection 3 of the statute, is that sufficient to withstand the 12B6 dismissal? Maybe not a summary judgment, but is it a 12B6 dismissal?
Well, and on a 12B6, it is the trial court has the discretion to look at the least sophisticated consumer standard and say that they're not going to forward bizarre or idiosyncratic. The trial court has the discretion to say PC isn't enough. And Judge Sirk correctly said that PC isn't enough by itself to tell anybody, because a professional corporation, and this is a professional corporation, there was some reference to New Jersey, it's a New York corporation, sending a letter into Pennsylvania. I don't know that the least sophisticated consumer sees PC and knows all of the different companies who may be acting as fiduciary, which is usually
Solomon and Solomon attorneys at law.
Solomon and Solomon are attorneys at law. And
what if the letter said that? Would that be different?
If the letter said Solomon and Solomon attorneys at law, then I believe we would be looking at a different case, and we would be looking at whether attorneys at law prompts the least sophisticated consumer to take an action that they would not take if it didn't say attorneys at law.
Okay, so we have a letter, and it's got a website in it, and one clicks on the payment, takes me to the payment page.
Yes.
We don't know what the payment page looks like in April of 2016, but let's say hypothetically it said nothing about the law firm. You would say you're still within the act. That would be your position, correct?
That would be our position, and that would go back to the second part of Judge McGee's hypothetical that I was going to address, which was...
You're going to totally distort.
If I'm that good.
You are.
Thank you. if the communication is directing the consumer to get information before they're making a decision from the website, and I think that's what was set up there. Hey, so-and-so, you owe this much money to Niagara Power. Please go to this website to find out more information about your debt and how to resolve it. And then that, and then the website had things on it that violated the FDCPA. And we would be examining the website as a communication. We would be looking at the website functioning as a letter, and we would judge the website under the same standards that we would judge a letter.
Okay, but you just said that if the letter had said Solomon & Solomon Attorneys at Law, that would be coercive. Okay, it's not there.
Yes.
I think that's what you said. So then we go, we don't have that in this case, but we have a jump site to a web page. That's the payment page. And say hypothetically, there's nothing on that page that tells me it's from a law firm. Okay? But there's another hyperlink on that, and I can click on that, and that tells me it's from a law firm. Doesn't the existence of this incorporated website do what you say the Act prohibits, which is using the power of a law firm to encourage payment?
I'm just struggling with your the hypothetical because, as Judge Cowan had noted earlier, if you're going to this website because you've already decided to make a payment, then you're kind of beyond what we're looking at. If you've, you know, if you're not going to the website because we've directed you to, and as you go there and go from one to the other, if there's an extra hyperlink there that gives you other information and nobody's directing you to use it, if it's see important disclosures before you make a decision, then what we would then be doing is looking at what's on that page.
Okay, so your position, is it, tell me if I'm correct about this, is it your position this particular letter should be judged based upon the words on the page and, if we had it in front of us, the website for the payment website, not the entire firm website?
It wouldn't be the entire firm website any more than it would be if they Googled Niagara Power and said, well, how often do these folks actually sue people to enforce these debts? That's an independent investigation and doesn't have anything to do with the communication from my client to them. If we had the situation where we knew what was on the site or that there was even an allegation that the plaintiff here looked at that site, then we would then examine and see, hey, does this site, are there things on this site that violate the FDCPA? Is there something here where there's some coercion going on? And I'd like to remind the court that besides the decision not to replead the case was originally pled as a class action. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons why it may not have been repled, I'm just supposing here, is that you would have to look and see, well, did each person go on to this website? Which of the people who received the letter went to the website? Which of the people who went to the website hit the hyperlink?
Yeah.
And that undermines the entire thing.
What makes this case different than the QR cases, though, where you scan it, you see it's a collection letter from, so instead of a scan, it's a website you're opening up.
Well, there's two issues with the QR case. One is that the QR cases were about the prohibition on the FDCPA for having information on the outside of an envelope that might indicate to other people that this was a debt, because you don't want a debt collection company to try to shame people into paying their debts because their neighbors or somebody else in the house can see it. Now, the QR code, going to the next part of that, you can't have that on the outside. There was a use of the QR scanner, and the QR scanner found local information, which was the file number of the case for the debt collector. The idea being, if they got returned mail and they didn't want to open and shell the mail, they just wanted to process what it was, they could scan it and they would know what went back quickly. It was determined by a lower court that perhaps, and this was on a motion to dismiss again and a remand on that, or I believe it was a remand, that perhaps that information might be personal information. There was never a determination in any of those QR cases that the internal file number was sufficiently protected information or that it would tell some other person that this person had a debt, only that it was improper that it could be read on the outside, even if someone was more or less illegally taking your mail and scanning it with a phone.
So is it your position then, as it relates to this letter, that because there's no allegation in the complaint that the plaintiff personally looked at the website, this case should fail, at least on those grounds? There's no standing because there could be no injury from that if the letter itself is not problematic.
If the letter was problematic, if there was some allegation that they went to the website
it would be fine. They would have standing if the website intimidated, coerced, etc. But if there's no allegation the plaintiff personally looked at the website, is it your view there would be no standing to rely on the...
There would be no standing to say that something on the website violated the FDCPA.
Correct. Let's say we agree with that, and that's a disposition of this case as is. But are we then at leave to, or are we... forced to say that the district court, having dismissed it on that basis, should have also given leave to amend the complaint and make whatever, even though it appears the plaintiff stood on the complaint and didn't ask for leave, should the district court, sua sponte, so to speak, when you dismiss the case based on that type of reasoning, give the leave to amend automatically in the dismissal without the plaintiff asking for leave?
Well,
that's his position.
The position of the court was to look at the letter and not look outside the letter. And there's never been...
We don't question that. Let's say we agree with that. Yeah. But the plaintiff's position is, if that was the district court's position, he should have got leave to amend automatically from the district court, even though he himself stood on the complaint. He felt he had enough. He didn't ask for leave to amend.
Well... The court had the discretion to dismiss with prejudice, and I don't think it was an abuse of discretion to dismiss with prejudice. I don't think that it would have been automatic, which is what I'm surmising that the
case... His position is the district court, having dismissed it for dismissed it, should have automatically given leave to amend, or at this point we should remand it back with leave to amend.
I believe that the request for leave to amend was waived. I don't think that there is standing to say that it should be automatic absent a finding that Judge Sirk abused his discretion by deciding affirmatively to dismiss it with prejudice. I don't think that the right was a dismissal without prejudice, and that right can be somehow reclaimed even if it wasn't requested by the plaintiff.
There's no allegation. That's not argued. There's an abuse of discretion here by the dismissal without prejudice. Mm-hmm. I'm not seeing that.
Okay.
Came up today, but not in the brief.
Well, I don't believe that there's any question in the brief about repleting the case, or there was any argument that they should have been allowed to replead the case in the appellant's brief. So it was not only waived at the district court level, it's waived at the Third Circuit before your honors.
If the letter, let's say hypothetically we had a website in front of us, and the payment website said, Solomon & Solomon is a collections law firm, would that make this letter problematic? Because the letter says we're debt collectors.
I think that would have to be judged separately. I don't think that it makes the first letter problematic, because as the letter is drafted, the decision is made before you go to the payments page. If there was something wrong with that page, if something that would have had to have been assessed differently to the extent that the court found that that was a communication addressed to this debtor.
You're saying as this letter was drafted, it's immaterial, but that you could have a letter drafted differently which drives traffic to the website, then you have to look at the website along with the letter.
Yes.
And see if it was violated.
I believe so. Just as you would have to look at a letter front to back to see if some of the language on the front is overshadowing some of the language on the back. You look at the actual communication because that's what the FDCPA does.
So you don't object to the concept of incorporating by reference a website to which a recipient is directed?
I don't have a problem with it. I think that that opens up the door to looking at each page of the website that the person has examined and putting it through the same analysis under the FDCPA that you would put any other communication through.
But that depends, and I think that's what you're saying before, it's the very point, and whether or not the letter drives the person or suggests in a quote coercive, close quote way. Did they go to the website as opposed to just putting the citation for the website in the letter, knowing that most folks are going to go there, but you're not telling them to go there, because maybe they're going there to pay, in which case, as I think one of my colleagues said earlier, or maybe you said, at that point the decision was already made to pay and there couldn't be a violation then under the Act.
Correct. I'd rely on Jensen v. Pressler and Pressler, 791 F3rd 413, which is a Third Circuit opinion from 2015, and an unreported Gomez v. Oxford Law, LLC 657 Fed APPX Appendix 141, Third Circuit 2016, both of which I believe are cited in our brief, which state that the touchstone is this abusive in that it prompts unreasonably prompts an action.
So with your position that that a website could be incorporated, then didn't the district court make a legal error in saying it couldn't be?
The district court would have made a legal error if there was information that was that the plaintiff was directed to look at before making a decision, or if the plaintiff was affirmatively directed to look at that for something other than a decision that had been made. If you want to make payments, please contact us here. And it said the website is Solomon Payment. The websites in the brief that refer to communications which were directed to potential clients, those websites aren't disclosed in the brief or in the briefing in the underlying case. There's also a phone number and there's also emails if you have other kinds of questions. If you were still making a decision, you go and you call somebody up and you talk to a person. If there's some problem with that, that's a different issue. You evaluate that communication. But this is Solomon Payments. You're deciding you're paying the money.
What do you say that it appears, this is a little off the record, maybe it's not too respectable for me to say, but
he's from California. So
I'm California. We're the People's Republic. Yeah. And everything is liable. We're going to be cross-eyed and liable. So that you change your website, and under, it's not a criminal case, but under a criminal case, that's, they call it evidence of guilt or something, that you change your, meanwhile, since this happened, this whole case, you've changed your tune on the website. So it doesn't say the same thing it said. Now, is that, under criminal law, that certainly would be evidential to show consciousness of guilt or I forget what they call it.
That's it.
Okay. A wrongdoing or something of that nature.
I'm sorry, is that an observation or a
question? I'm saying you changed your tune in the website since the website originally said what it said. It now doesn't point up at your law firm so quickly. It has a different tune to it.
Well, I'm not sure that a subsequent remedial measure would be evidence of something in this instance.
If that was 12B6, is that something the fact finder could consider? If there was enough there to get past the motion to dismiss and summary judgment.
And none of this was put into the pleadings, none of it was argued. The websites that were referenced in the pleadings and in, well, not even in the
this
pleadings.
Is not, I mentioned this
motions.
Is not in the record. I do, it has been brought to my attention
when the camera's
that
on.
You change your tune in the website.
Not by us, man. Just look at his law clerks. We're law clerks.
Well, I'm not entirely sure what thing we changed our tune for, but the website, whether
it does not
the,
read the same as the time that you sent this letter.
I actually, because of where we were in the pleadings, I didn't complete the discovery to find the different websites over the different times, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Jones? Mr. Jones, there was one thing Mr. McDevitt did. He let us ask questions. We didn't have to speak over him. I just tossed that out for observation.
I apologize.
I get told that quite often at home as well. Too often, actually. I got to be frank. I look at that letter, okay, and I try to view it from the position of the least sophisticated consumer, and I don't even think you need to go to the website, okay? I can't read that letter and imagine who else besides a law firm with the name Solomon & Solomon PC is sending Ms. Daniels a letter about her Niagara electric bill, okay? I think it's pretty clear.
This is also off the record and totally not germane, but how does she incur liability in that Niagara? That's Buffalo. Erie County. It's my neck of the woods. How'd she get her?
I don't know the particulars behind it, Your Honor.
I'm just curious. It's not relevant.
It would probably, it looks as though it must have been for a while because it's for a sizable amount.
Consumers think Solomon & Solomon PC is the debt collection agency's corporate name? I mean, why isn't that as reasonable for a least sophisticated consumer as it's a doctor, architect, lawyer?
Well, I mean, a doctor or an architect wouldn't be sending a debt collection letter.
But what about my other hypothetical, that it was just an organizational entity, the debt collector decided they wanted to have the benefits of the corporate protection?
But a debt collection agency would then have INC behind it.
Why couldn't they be PC?
Because they're not authorized to be PC. PC is for certain learned professionals.
But this is the least sophisticated debtor.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I think that's pretty common knowledge. I think even a least sophisticated consumer knows that. But
that
I think,
PC is a collection of professionals?
That PC stands for professional, it stands for professional
corporation. But couldn't a least sophisticated consumer think a professional is anyone who's specialized in a subject area?
They could possibly think that, but then that would mean that it's misleading because it's subject to more than one interpretation, and one which certainly isn't true. And if something's subject to multiple interpretations and one of those interpretations is inaccurate, that's by definition under the FDCPA misleading. But I think if you look into the letter, we talked a lot about the website, but if you look at the letter in its totality, if you call the 800 number, is it a law firm that answers the telephone? Do you know you're talking to a law firm? And they lead you to
not
a phone.
Not in the record, so.
Yeah, I attempted to do that this morning, but I couldn't be sure that the answer I got was the same answer that your client would have gotten.
There's an email address as well. If you email it, are you emailing to the law firm? I think the dangerous thing here is that if we allow law firms to take the ESQ off of the attorney's name, or simply redact from their letterhead attorneys at law, we're then going to allow every collection law firm, okay, law firms, to drop letters into jurisdictions that they're not licensed without disclosing that they're attorneys. And I think
so
that that's
a problem.
So you
would like us to come up with a rule that says if a law firm is acting as a debt collector, it must disclose its identity as a law firm?
I think that rule already exists. Okay, I don't think you have to create a new one. I think that already exists. And let me just give an example. Many collection agencies try to use names like a law firm, to sound like a law firm, to kind of scare the consumer. Because the consumer knows that when a debt goes to a law firm, the price of poker has gone up, okay? A well-quoted phrase from a lot of the circuits. A lawyer gets the consumer's knees, bouncing back and forth. They get nervous about it, okay? They know something could happen. So debt collection agencies sometimes go out and they try to get names, they try to use names that sound like a law firm. Philip Cohen Associates and those type of things, where you read it, and I've had judges say, is this a law firm? And I scratch my head. I said, the judge doesn't know if it's a law firm or not. How's the least sophisticated consumer supposed to know that? Okay? The point is what they're trying to do is they're trying to get them to call, and I believe that the consumer knows that Solomon & Solomon is a law firm, and they're not disclosing that they can't actually take.
But she didn't call. That's the problem with the argument there. At least from my perspective, it's a good argument.
I would
send a message that she called.
I would respectfully submit that it should either be reversed or we should be allowed. My client should be given the opportunity to replead. And if she can replead, we can replead it, and then they can make a 12B6 motion down below and let the judge make a decision on that. But I think if that's what the decision is based on, I think my client should be given the opportunity to replead the complaint. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.